can be seen. Only those with true faith, evidently.
Okay. Let me... No, you should be able to do
it. I think your box too, Hanny. So I've got a double me on my screen.
Not a bad thing. Supposed to be muted. Let's see if I don't see you here. You disappeared. Oh, okay. Now you're in.
Okay, good to go?
Yeah.
So I'm going to be speaking about the Syriac life of Saint Shenouda. And the goal of this ongoing research is a re-examination of the Syriac life of Shenouda, as it was initially translated by No, if I'm saying the name correctly, more than a century ago, providing a fresh translation as well as exploring the Syriac character of the Syriac version of the life of Shenouda. So there are several accounts of the life of Shenouda that come down to us across numerous languages, Boharic and Sahidic Coptic, Arabic, Ethiopic, and Syriac. The two Syriac accounts that come down to us from Now and are Now and Guidi's fragments. Guidi will not be discussed in this paper. The Paris manuscript published by Now was written in 1194 by the scribe Behnam at the monastery of Mar Sargis and Mar Zaura in the vicinity of Mosul, which is in Iraq. So was the Syriac edition published by Now an intentional literary text or a work deriving out of an oral or liturgical environment? Bradshaw has previously distinguished between literary and liturgical texts where literary manuscripts were copied with the aim to preserve antiquity and make an accurate reproduction of the original. Liturgical texts that belong to living literature, on the other hand, were subject to constant revisions and rewritings with which changed historical and cultural circumstances. So the peculiarities present in the Syriac text published by Now provide a number of questions that point to the text produced within the framework of oral literature. That is to say, literature that emerges from a living or working environment where praxis supersedes textual production and devotion. The Syriac text may be distinguished from the collection of extant versions of the life of Shenouda in the following ways. It is considerably shorter than the Boharic, Arabic, and Ethiopic versions. It has a unique introduction and conclusion. It follows a slightly different order of the episodes of the life of Shenouda. And finally, variations of the names of the chief characters in the story are present. So the length of the Syriac Now text is a self-contained, that is, the story is framed through its own introduction and conclusion at nearly one quarter of the story of the longer versions, or at least those calibrated against Aboisa's Life of Shenouda, and only lists a little more than half of the episodes that the Boharic version contains in the same section. A portion of the Syriac Now text, section 10, is incomplete, though it still follows the abridged pattern in comparison with Besa or Wisa's Life of Shenouda and the Arabic published by Amelino, as well as the Boharic. The Syriac Now text generally follows the early portion of the larger narratives. So the text bears narration from the beginning and stops, unlike the Syriac fragments published by Guidi. The introduction found in positions the text in a monastic setting to be read during what I'll argue is a shahro service, meaning a watch or a vigil service. Shahar just means to guard or to watch, it's vigil. It could also have been a possibility that this was given in place of a husoyo prayer in the Syriac tradition, which previously, you know, could be used for the place of a sermon, but I believe the shahro service is more likely. This service is usually a spiritual evening on the vigil of the saint's feast day, where the Bible is read along with certain hymns chanted and a sermon is given. And so the introduction that we have for the Syriac proceeds as follows. Ahai, my brethren, let us raise glory to the Lord of glory, to the one who chose the holy vessels useful for his service and placed them in his church in the likeness of lamps that enlighten the creation, so that all those who seek to enter the kingdom of God should imitate them in their manner and receive the crowns of victory. One of those whom the Lord Yahweh chose himself is this elect and saint, Abba Shenuddin, whose story we propose to recount before you today, that you may raise glory to he who made his eminence shine upon the whole world for the glory of God who chose him. So the call, Ahai, my brothers, or my brethren, is a liturgical cue found before the Pauline reading during the Eucharistic service. This is followed by the invocation to raise glory, a call regularly found in the various Syriac liturgical anaphorae during the celebration of the Divine Eucharist, though I did see it once at the end of a letter by Bar Ebroyo, who actually happens to be contemporaneous with the text and the region, or at least the time it was copied. So the theme of light is very prevalent in Syriac liturgical imagery. And here we see the saints are compared to oil lamps that enlighten the creation. Further, the general description of the saint as a lamp is narrowed down by indicating the specific commemoration of Saint Shenouda for the purpose of inspiring those gathered to raise glory to God who made his, that is the saint's, eminence shine upon the whole world for the glory of God who chose him. So, for example, we see similar imagery in our Eucharistic service. The Syriac Orthodox liturgy concludes the end of the night or morning twilight in preparation for the break of the dawn with the following chant. By your light, we see light, O Jesus, full of light. You are the true light who enlightens all creation. O Heavenly Father's radiance, lighten us with your glorious light. Holy One who dwells in habitations of light, etc. Now, the story immediately switches from the first person plural to the first person singular at this point. It reads, truly I have heard from God, I have heard from God, who said to his disciple and also to me, do not reveal this vision that you all saw before my resurrection from the dead. I will reveal the eminence of the saint after his departure. Again, I heard him say, he who keeps my commands and observes them will do more these works and wonders that I did and made happen. So too will he do. This appears to be a quote from a previous tradition to the composition of this specific text, whether it was a collection of sayings or stories of the fathers, and in this case, Saint Shenouda, or if this was transmitted from memory to be coded along with the textual additions. Immediately thereafter, the text stops using the first person singular and returns to the first person plural as follows. And now we will begin, my brothers, placing the wick of the lamp, not under the bushel, but on the candlestick, so that it lights all those who are dwelling in the house of this world. And first we shall inform, as is appropriate, about the place and profession of the parents of this Holy Father Shenuddin, who is from Upper Egypt, from a village which is the Thebais, from a village, and his father is a farmer. He had a plentiful flock, and he gave it over to a shepherd. The number of ewes increased, and the shepherd became unable to handle his flock, but he begged the father of Holy Shenuddin to give him his son to help him to shepherd the herd, and he would leave a small part of his pay to them. Here again, the light imagery is invoked in order to transition to the story proper. Now, this third person narration describes events that Besa's life of Shenuta differs in a few areas. I'm not best when it comes to Egyptian geography, and I know this conference is filled with those who could better articulate the distance and how substantial it would be, but the Syriac account of Thebaeus differs from Bace's account, stating that the family of St. Shenouda was from a village called Shenaloet in the known of Shmin. If I did the measurements right, I think it comes out to something a little more than 250 kilometers away from one another. That being the case, it would seem that the Syriac is referring to a city or region better known to foreigners than some other village or hamlet that might be more obvious to the local population. Here also we find a basic narration of the events contrary to Bace's Life of Shenouda that uses direct quotation to explain the beginning of the count. Whereas the Syriac now provides us with, but he begged his father, the holy Shenoudin, to give him his son to help him shepherd the herd, Bace's account provides a direct quote, give me your boy, Shenouda, to watch over the sheep with me, and I will give you a little of my wages for him. The Syriac text does go into portions where the direct quotation increases and better measures against other versions, but it also reverts back to more general narration in places rather than employing direct quotation. The text also differs in terms of episode order in at least one place. Lubomirsky notes the remarkability of this in that the non-Sahidic versions show that the order of their episodes are largely the same, but the main portion of the Syriac does not follow any obvious principle of order, where it adds episode 17 before episode 10. As noted by Now and Simpson, with the exception of the opening and closing episodes, all episodes have an equivalent in Bohairic and Arabic versions. The Syriac text does not contain an episode that has only survived in the Arabic and or the Ethiopian version. The Syrian version also lacks episodes from the Bohairic version. So considering the back and forth between general narration and more specific quotation, with at least one of the episodes of Shenouda's life being presented out of order, it's credible that the structure of the piece is not directly dependent on a specific text. Apart from these narrative considerations, there are a few issues related to the language that complicate the account. One such example may be found in the account of Shenouda's fasting. The standard accounts produce Shenouda not eating from Sabbath to Sabbath, which in Syriac reads Minshabtho to Shabtho, which can also be understood from week to week and would not necessarily be confined to a one-week period. In the Syriac text, this is also prefaced by he would fast many weeks when he would not eat. Additionally, forms of certain words like matanya are written down according to a Greek form, metonia. So the Syriac orthography is reflecting a Greek tradition of the word. And once it does this and directly as matanya in other portions of the text, according to other extant editions that I've compared it with, suggesting the author's personal understanding of the terms orthography in Syriac. Now, when it comes to the names in this text, there are several oddities that create interesting questions for transmission across language boundaries. Shenoudi is rendered as Shenoudin. So presumably the dolat for tau, the D for T, is reflective of a Bohairic chain of transmission, be it direct or somehow related to an unknown Arabic intermediary. Moreover, end of the name concludes with a nun, an N, so he's Shenoudin. I have not found a Coptic dialect or intermediary language that would produce this transition, so hopefully there's an expert in the crowd who can assist me in this regard. In the meantime, I would speculate that the name probably results from an acceptable nominal form given to popular Arabic names and titles at that time. So just to locate this manuscript again, it is written in 1194, and that is a year after the death of Salah ad-Din, who was originally from Tikrit, and the monks of this monastery would likely have been connected, if not directly descended, from the Tikriti tradition in the Eastern community of the Syriac Orthodox Church. Communities today found in places like Bartile, Bekhdeda, or Karakosh, as it's officially known, and a few others. But the region permeated with others bearing this, the deen suffix, you know, this Arabic term for religion, like Nur ad-Din, Zain ad-Din, the Lord of Erbil, Muzaffar ad-Din, the Lord of Edessa, Umar Taqi ad-Din, and several others bearing this title. All this to say, it appears that the rendering Shenouda as Shenouddin utilizes a proper nominal form known to the area, and that name is not a direct reference to any one of these bearing the Arabic title or nominal suffix. In other words, it's not trying to be a commentary on leaders of the time. It doesn't look that way at all. Now, Abawisa is confused in the text with Abapishe. While the P sounds are regularly changed for B when transitioning to Arabic, confusing these names on textual grounds will be difficult from both the Coptic and Arabic perspectives. The Coptic writing with the B and the Arabic writing with the Wau to articulate this name. Further, the Syriac use of the Shin for the Arabic Sod would be unique. Abawisa is not mentioned in the text. Interestingly, that correlates with two Coptic fragments pointed out by Lubomirsky. While Pishe is used to render Wisa, Abba Pijul is rendered as Bajuli in Syriac, where the P to Beth or the P to B exchange is occurring. So the inconsistency in spelling suggests that there is no consistent scribal convention, and thus they ought to be considered personalized spellings based on the known parlance of the local tradition. So Lubomirsky has also importantly pointed out that the living liturgical aspect of several of these accounts of the life of Shenouda. He regards some of the texts, those of the so-called Vita Shenouti, as to be understood as remnants of this broad oral and written tradition of transmission about Shenouda's life. And so we may be seeing something like this in the Syriac as well. And given these preliminary findings, a few options remain for the background of the text production of the Syriac Now version. One, the text emerged from memory rather than direct copying. And two, the text integrated new material with a fragmentary or abridged earlier edition. With the first option, the variance in names best fits the case of memory-inspired renditions resulting from the local parlance, as does the abridged narration of stories without directly quoted dialogue. Further, dialogue delivered in the form of quotation is not outside the bounds of memory-driven literature and can often be regarded as mnemonic hooks or memory devices for professional storytellers. For option two, the Syriac edition published by Now exhibits the features of a living liturgical text, as pointed out by Bradshaw, namely the existence of multiple recitations, sometimes exhibiting quantitative differences, so a longer and a shorter version, and sometimes qualitative differences, so the various ways of saying the same thing, often with no clear reflection of a single Ur text or an original, and sometimes both. Both options may also have intertwined to produce the finished product from the hand of the scribe Behnam. There could have been maybe some sets of sayings, for example. And you know, part of me wonders deep down with some of the Greek forms, if that's just a linguistic issue from the Syriac, or there was a Greek urtext that may have existed at one point, and you know, maybe the base for several others. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have a little bit of time for questions if you want to write them. And remember to hit the enter button after you finish, otherwise it wouldn't come through. So, well, being the moderator, I can talk. How much of the life in Syriac is preserved, roughly? That manuscript would be how much of the original?
Well,
We can't hear you. Another technical problem. Let's see. Where did you go?
Here I am. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. So I think I'd have to know a little bit better about an original. So what I've understood was calibrated against the long version of Bass's Life of Shenouda. And if that's what you mean by original, I think it looks like a quarter of the story. It's mostly the beginning. And it follows a lot of the beginning, but skips various portions of these episodes, flips it in one place, but it stops at a certain point. It stops, stand by. It doesn't go very long.
Is it a continuous text as far as the folios, or there are missing pages?
If that's something I need to see if I can look at the manuscript itself rather than Now's publication.
The manuscript is...
There are big missing piece in the toward the end. In section 10 out of, I believe it's 16. Section 10 out of 16. No, section 10 out of 14 is damaged and missing. But the following sections, 11 through 13, 14 is the Syriac's unique closing, but the following sections still proceed in order. So they don't necessarily jump to a different location toward the end of Bass's life.
Okay, well, we have a couple of questions from Janet. Any thought on the base text from which Syriac was translated? Was it the Arabic, Sahidic, or Buharic?
You know, like I went back and forth, but I kind of don't think the Arabic. I think something more either Coptic or it was understood. You know, maybe there's a Greek one out there that had existed. You know, what would have been the intermediary if not Arabic? And maybe it's an unknown Arabic. You know, looking at the Arabic published by Amelino, there are substantial orthographic differences that Syriac being a cousin, a Semitic language, not too different from Arabic, would not be present. It would have to have been from a different manuscript one we don't have, were it to have come from there. But I would have to, after reading Lubomirsky, I'm kind of like, okay, well, it seems as though he's saying there's a lot more out there that doesn't exist, or we haven't cataloged it or translated it, if it still survives. And it makes it hard in that case. Orthographically, you know, Shenoudin, using the D, puts it more in the Buharic camp, from what I understand. And I think that's the limit of how I can answer that.
Then Donna was asking other recensions, Armenian, Ethiopic. Well, Ethiopic, there is one which is based on the Buharic. I don't know if there's any Armenian now.
I didn't encounter any of the secondary readings about it.
Yeah, I think Ethiopic, yes. We probably have several manuscripts, but not Armenian. So Donna will be doing that.
I hope so. And, you know, there seems to have been two fragmentary manuscripts. I think they were Sahidic, but... They could have, anyway, there are a couple Coptic manuscripts that do sort of reflect what we find in the Syriac. No mention of Abu Isa is one. They're much shorter, and they don't cover the same narrative portions as the Syriac, but they come across differently. And, I think he says they may have been used, toward different purposes, whether it be on something specific to the commemoration of the saint or something for sermon production, or I'd have to reread that chapter.
Okay. If there's any more question, thank you very much.
Thank you.